Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the Bulletin, about under the heading of Great Ways to Save, and this is about cookouts and parties. Shop supermarkets strategically. In addition to purchasing in-season produce, you can save by taking advantage of sales at individual grocery stores. Make your list, then check apps such as Flip, F-L-I-P-P, or GroceryPal to see the circulars and sales at participating supermarkets and big box stores in your area. Some stores require you to be a loyalty club member for the most savings, so load your membership into the Keyring app for easy success. Build your menu around the bargains. Look for a manager markdown in your supermarket where the staff reduces prices on soon-to-expire items. These are often done at the store level, so they don't appear in the circulars, but discounts can run up to 70% off, says budget consultant Andrea Warrock. And ask your guests to help. Casual summer parties, picnics, and barbecues work great as potlucks. Use a site such as perfectpotluck.com or signupgenius.com to coordinate who is bringing what and to limit overlap. Guests who don't want to cook can sign up for bringing paper plates or utensils. Stock up on summer decor right after Memorial Day. The party supplies that go on sale after Memorial Day, cups, paper plates, plastic utensils, and so on, will work just as well for Independence Day and Labor Day later in the summer season, says Kimberly Palmer, a spokesperson for personal finance website NerdWallet. Look for clearance sales on such items as grocery stores, party supply stores, and dollar stores. Buy your booze at a warehouse club, even without a membership. You don't have to join to save. Non-members can access the discounted prices on alcoholic beverages at BJ's and Sam's Club, and the savings can be significant. At Costco, the rules vary by state, so check your local outlet's website to see if you can save. Skip single-serving drinks. Canned and individually bottled soda and water can get expensive. Skip them and instead make a punch with or without alcohol or lemonade and put out a large pitcher filled with ice water and slices of lemon or lime. People always think that's fancy and it's basically free, says Hannah Rinaldi, who runs the blog Eat, Drink, and Save Money. And finally, get creative with leftovers. Making leftovers more appetizing means you're more likely to eat them, saving you the cash you would have spent on subsequent meals. The key is to create dishes that don't make you feel like you're eating the same thing every day. For example, leftover patties can go into a pasta dish or cheeseburger salad, while pork shoulder can become a taco filling. Now, from AARP, the magazine, we were reading about some health issues that we face in our 70s or 80s. And now let's look at Alzheimer's disease. Keeping your body and brain active may help you skirt this challenging disease. Who among us hasn't experienced a brief moment of confusion? Where the heck are my keys? Where did I put my reading glasses? And immediately thought, is this the start of my memory decline? This panic is all too common, says the Mayo Clinic's Peterson, but there's a big difference between incidental forgetfulness and Alzheimer's, he says. Incidental forgetfulness, which is just not remembering as well as you used to, is not usually a sign of disease. So, how do you spot the difference? Distractibility is a big factor in minor memory loss, says Holland. I use the example of going to the kitchen to get a snack, but then I notice a picture is tilted, so I adjust it and realize it's dirty. And one thing leads to another, and by the time I'm done cleaning the kitchen, I don't know why I was in there to begin with, he says. Memory lapses that could be a warning of Alzheimer's tend to be the things we typically take for granted, says Holland. Like forgetting how to get home, forgetting faces of siblings, partners, children, or forgetting specific parts of one's profession that were normally second nature. If you find yourself questioning your memory lapses, here are some ways to lower your risk of Alzheimer's. 1. Do household chores. Exercise can be a huge dementia deterrent, reducing Alzheimer's risk by as much as 45%, according to some studies. But it can also pose dangers of its own. As we get older, there is a need for caution to prevent falls and to avoid strain on tendons and ligaments. Let's see. While vigorous exercise may be best for brain health, even low-impact exercise can make a difference. A 2022 study found that regularly doing household chores like sweeping or washing the dishes or anything where you're on your feet and moving was associated with a 21% lower risk of developing dementia. Any type of physical activity keeps the circulation system in good shape to provide blood flow to the brain. Work your brain. We should be constantly stimulating our brains in different ways. Anything from quilting to learning a second language could build your brain to withstand the progression of cognitive decline. But you don't necessarily have to learn an entire new skill to reap the benefits. What's most important is that it's something you enjoy doing. If it's not fun, you won't return to it. That's what's most important. What do you love that isn't sitting and mindlessly watching TV? Is it doing the crossword puzzle or playing Sudoku? Then do that. Is it staying up to date on current affairs? Do that. Just stay intellectually active. And then number 3 is go green. A recent study found a correlation between gut inflammation and Alzheimer's. This suggests that lowering gut inflammation later in life through a diet rich in whole foods and fiber may help to keep the progression of Alzheimer's at bay. Studies suggest that the primary plant-based MIND, M-I-N-D, diet and the Green Med diet, a variation on the popular Mediterranean meal plan that further reduces meat in favor of more dark leafy vegetables and green tea, may do just that. These diets are preeminent ways we can protect cognitive health, says Holland. Don't look for shortcuts with vitamin supplements. We now understand that it's the entire composition of the food, including bioactives like the flavonoids, that make these foods beneficial. Your doctor may recommend supplements to address nutritional gaps, but for a richer source of nutrients, eat your fruits and vegetables and drink some tea every now and again. And finally, call a friend. Interact with loved ones may help to boost your levels of a protein called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. This person has studied the connection between brain function and having active social connections. Higher BDNF levels correlate with stronger cognitive reserve, which can stimulate brain activity. In other words, BDNF can serve as an indicator of sufficient fuel in the task in your brain. Talking with friends, and just as important, listening to them, keeps us sharp and engaged and gives us resilience and the ability to use our brains flexibly. It actually cushions the brain against deterioration. And in a sidebar, we have read a book for 6 minutes. You don't need to wear out your library card to reap the benefits of a good book. One study found that simply sitting down to read a book for just 6 minutes every day can lower your heart rate, ease muscle tension, and reduce stress levels. Now, also from the magazine, we have an article here on inheritance time bombs and how to defuse them. Older Americans hold nearly two-thirds of the country's wealth, about $93 trillion in assets that could pass to younger generations. Whatever the size of the handoff in your family, these expert battles plans can help you avoid disaster. Oh, the things some people will do to over inheritance dollars. In the news on any given day, you're likely to find a juicy case involving inherited wealth, like Priscilla Presley's lawsuit last year, contesting the will that left control of Elvis's estate to her granddaughter. Personally, I've seen once close siblings sever ties after one received the family home as compensation for caregiving duties. I've even had a close call myself when I asked my current partner of 12 years if he had updated his will after his divorce. He hadn't. There's a reason inheritance strife is so common. Older adults hold a large majority of America's personal wealth, much of which is likely to be passed on to younger generations. And no matter how rich or poor a family is, every dollar has the potential to spark a disagreement. The cruelest thing you can do to your heirs? Simply expect your estate planning nonchalance to be easily rectified, your will mistakes fixed, or your unexpressed wishes magically fulfilled after you're gone. Old paperwork may be set in stone upon your death. Subsequent courtroom battles, if they're even affordable, they're not for many heirs, guarantee further strife. We're here to help. Here are some common inheritance situations that are potentially explosive, according to estate planning lawyers and other professionals, along with tips for getting them under control. The caregiver conundrum. You're leaving the house to the kid who moved home to be your cook, chauffeur, nurse's aide, therapist for the past decade. The other kids will understand, right? Perhaps, or perhaps not. This is an area ripe with the potential for hard feelings, says Andy Arnold, CEO at financial planning firm Centerline Wealth Advisors in Louisville, Kentucky. The solution? Tact and transparency. Whether you're planning to leave your caregiver your home, a jewelry collection, or a large portion of your cash, explain your decision-making process. Arnold offers some sample phrasing. I plan to leave a larger share of my estate to your sister since she is here in town with me and helps me on a regular basis. I hope you will understand my reasoning and know it has absolutely nothing to do with my love for you. I simply want to recognize that she spent hours with me that she could not spend at work, and I would like to help make up for that difference. Let the kids know who receive less know that they will what they will get, so they don't feel completely left out. Being open now can potentially save your caregiving child from dealing with hostile siblings and a contested will after you're gone. You can't explain your thinking then. Number two, false expectations. Your kids think you'll be leaving them caviar and champagne, but all they'll be getting is pretzels and beer. You may be embarrassed about your finances, but it's critical to shatter any illusions, says Michael Lehman, CEO of investment advisor Premier Path Wealth Partners in Madison, New Jersey. If you delay, your children may make unrealistic financial plans, only to have the rug pulled out from under them, he says. I've been privy to one too many situations where a family is counting too heavily upon inheritance to make their own retirement scenarios achievable, Arnold says. Even if you have no cash to pass on, you'll do your family a great service by planning who gets any items of sentimental value. In my private practice days, one of the most contentious disputes involved Beanie Babies, said Mitchell, product counsel at Estate Planning Company Trust and Will. They didn't have a great resale value, he says, but the siblings fought over their parents' collection because there's no will specifically covering that property. Number three, trust issues. You want to leave money for all your kids, but you're concerned about Neil, the youngest, and his fondness for blackjack tables. A trust comes in handy here. It's a legal document that specifies how you want your assets distributed after your demise. It's ideal for any situation that needs structure, says Christopher Davis, partner at investment management firm Hudson Value Partners, based in Morristown, New Jersey. It's controlled by a trustee whom you appoint, who has the power to make decisions in line with your stated wishes. You can set up a trust to distribute money at certain ages. You can use it to encourage positive behavior. You can restrict funds for children engaging in harmful activities, says Martha Hartney, principal attorney at Hartney Law in Boulder, Colorado. So the trust isn't inflexible. You might appoint what's known as a trust protector. That person can modify a trust in response to changing circumstances while maintaining fidelity to your original intent, she says. To set up a trust with conditions that are practical and enforceable, you'll need to work with a trust and estate's attorney, which could cost a few thousand dollars. You'll also need to specify how the trust will be funded. When selecting a trustee, consider a close friend, family member, or professional trustee, but not your troubled child's more responsible sibling. That's a recipe for disaster. If you're concerned about one child feeling singled out, you can create an appropriate trust for each of your offspring. Don't keep the trust a secret. We have all had adult children inherit assets in the form of a trust with no prior communication and resent the fact that restrictions have been placed on their inheritance. Number four, a blended family. At the risk of something like the evil step-parent, you want to leave your assets to your new spouse and your kids from a previous marriage, not to your stepchildren. Go ahead, play favorites. It's common for spouses in second marriages to want their spouse and kids, but not their spouse's children, to receive money, says Elliot Apple, founder of Kindness Financial Planning in Madison, Wisconsin. Whatever you do, don't assume that if you leave everything to your spouse, he or she will likely bequeath what's left to your kids. Instead, as in the previous time bomb, consider a trust. A common strategy is to leave money to support a surviving spouse while designating that upon the spouse's death, the remainder will go to your children. The tricky part is picking a trustee. If your surviving spouse is the trustee, that person has total control and could spend recklessly, leaving less for your children. If you name your kid, your spouse has the awkward task of asking that child for money. Hiring a professional could reduce conflicts. If you set up a trust that initially provides for your spouse, give your kids the right to annual accounting so they see how the money is being used. Transparency can also often prevent abuse. You might also want to give your children something directly upon your death so that they're not waiting for their step-parent to die. This is particularly sensible if your spouse is much younger than you. Number five, it's a business. Your family business is your passion and life's work. Only one child has been involved, but you have two other kids. How do you create a plan that doesn't turn into a made-for-TV drama? There are several ways to handle this. Depending on your business's current valuation, the sweat equity of the child involved, and the work of your overall estate, the worth of it. Here's what not to do. Do not put that one child in a situation where decisions about the business suddenly involve the passive siblings, warns Davis. The last thing you want is a forced partnership with an inexperienced brother or an estranged sister. Ideally, you're wealthy enough to give the business to one child and assets of equal value to the others, but that's usually not the case. Among your options, issue voting and non-voting shares so that the less involved kids get their benefits but don't have a say in how the company is run. Or you can give the active child a higher percentage of company ownership and equalize the estate by allocating the other liquid assets to the other children. Both those tactics come with pitfalls. Passive and not as active children may want dividends or push to sell the business, while the active child may want to reinvest and grow the company from which they may be drawing a salary. A typical case involved five children, only two of whom were active in the father's business. One possible solution was leaving ownership to all five, but putting the two involved sons in control. Another was to leave the business to those two sons and bequeath the remaining assets to other children. Neither solution would make everyone happy. Ultimately, the father, while alive, sold the business to the active sons, then divided his estate equally among all the children. That kept the peace, except for one child who thought the price the sons paid was too low. Advice from a professional can be a lifesaver in this situation. Whether you work with a financial planner, a lawyer, or a business consultant specializing in family firm succession. And finally, skipping generations. Your kids seem capable and secure as adults, so you've decided to mostly bypass them and pass your wealth to your grandkids instead. Your heart might be in the right place, but you could be setting up your children and your grandchildren for family strife and a bureaucratic mess. If the child is a minor, at least in some states, a guardianship account may need to be opened and supervised by the courts until the child reaches the age of majority. This process can be cumbersome and time-consuming. You might also end up undermining your child's parental power. If a grandchild knows they have money waiting in the wings from grandparents, they can snub their parents' disciplinary process. If you're set on leaving a grandkid money, consider creating a trust and naming the child's parents as trustees. This way, there's some authority in place while the grandchild has a source for their future. Here's another possible approach. With your children's permission, talk to your grandkids about personal finance and charitable giving so they can learn more about saving, investing, and spending wisely. While the kids may have their hearts set on cold, hard cash, you're giving them something more valuable: life lessons, bonding experiences, and emotional and psychological resource building that can serve them their entire lives. This article was put together by Laura Petroka, who was formerly the money manager editor at USA Today. Now, also from AARP, the magazine, we'll just get started on this, America Pilgrimages. When you think of a pilgrimage, a trip with deep personal meaning, destinations like Mecca or the Vatican might come to mind. But the United States has a number of sites of significance that attract visitors who travel with purpose. Let's look at Ellis Island. Her journey was made real for me. So many families, so much history, so many names on that curving wall with the Statue of Liberty in the background. About 40% of Americans can trace an ancestor's arrival and journey through Ellis Island, the transit point for millions of immigrants seeking to escape war, poverty, or persecution in Europe. Here, they were granted their American dream. They were people like Joyce Marcel's grandmother, Lena Kagan, who arrived at Ellis Island in 1908 at the age of 16 to escape Jewish persecution in Ukraine. Lena traveled by foot across mountains to board a ship bound for America. Marcel, 82, of Dummerston, Vermont, made a pilgrimage in 2017. Her journey was made real for me, she said. I remember my grandmother telling me how she practiced reciting her false name and birth dates in case they were stopped by the Cossacks. I've been kicking myself now that she's gone that I didn't ask more questions. From 1892 to 1924, more than 12 million immigrants were processed at Ellis Island. Today, this site in New York Harbor, operated by the National Park Service, includes a museum that draws millions of visitors per year. The centerpiece of the grounds is the American Immigrant Wall of Honor, where nearly 1 million names are etched into stainless steel. Pilgrims come to see their family name. Visitors can also research their ancestry on the American Family Immigration History Center database, which contains some 65 million records. If you go, Newark Liberty International is the closest of the New York City's airports. There is a ferry boat ride to Ellis Island from Lower Manhattan. Go to nps.gov/Ellis for information about fees. Then there's Gettysburg. It's truly hallowed ground. Few events hold such a consequential place in American history as the Battle of Gettysburg, a turning point in the Civil War. The three-day battle was its bloodiest, with an estimated more than 51,000 casualties. No surprise that pilgrims are attracted to these grounds. It has a double-barreled significance, says Jason Martz, communications specialist for the Gettysburg National Military Park, which is managed by the National Park Service. You want to walk in your ancestors' footsteps, see the biggest battlefield, which is still shaping the country as we speak, and it's the site of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. John McPherson, 76, of Brattleboro, Vermont, recently learned that his great-grandfather was abolitionist Thaddeus Stevens' law partner in Gettysburg and made a pilgrimage there to see his extended family's burial places. People say hallowed ground, and it's true. I suddenly had a sense that I had returned home. Visitors with distant connections to soldiers from North or South can make pilgrimages to the military park, walking past the more than 1,300 monuments, markers, and memorials, and approximately 150 historic buildings. We have a renowned guide program here, said Carl Whitehill of Destination Gettysburg. They ask you where you're from to try to connect you to your own family history, where the boys from your hometown fought. When you humanize the battle, it's very impactful. And this was by Veronica Stoddart and Robin Weston. If you go, Harrisburg International Airport is a 50-minute drive away. The battlefield is free to visit. There are fees for other attractions. Battlefield bus tours cost about $40. Well, with the time we have left, we have time for a few more bits of information about your brain. Did you know that anthropologists have found accounts of romantic love in at least 147 of 166 societies? Did you know that with increased levels of the neurochemical arginine, promiscuous voles become monogamous? And did you know that pain is considered both a sensory and an emotional experience? Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.